It is Thursday, October 24th. This is No Filter Sports. Eli Zarrett, Denny McClain, Bob Page. I've got a lot going on today. By the way, we did promo on our last show. We're going to have Bobby Hull. Bobby is recovering from a knee replacement, is in terrible pain.
Terrible.
Ironically enough, also in our queue to be interviewed was Dino Ciccarelli, right, who's going to join us later. And the irony is that on the all-time NHL scoring list, Hull is 18th with 610 goals, and Dino is 19th with 608. Both Hall of Famers. I don't think you put Dino, obviously, in Bobby Hull's class, but still a great former Red Wing.
No, remember this, of course, that in Bobby's era, they played fewer games, and Bobby scored, what, 240-something in world hockey.
Right, right.
Yeah, so that's just national hockey.
It's not fair to compare anybody to Bobby Hull, except for maybe Gordie Howe and Wayne Gretzky and maybe a couple of others.
Yeah, and one other guy that we're going to have on in the next week or two, Fergie Jenkins. I talked to
him. Yes, that would be great.
He's great. He's terrific.
Drew Lane excited as growing up as a Cubs fan that we're going to actually talk
to. And there's one thing about Fergie. Fergie travels the United States promoting his charity. That's all he does. It promotes the charity.
And the charity is?
And the, it's a children's charity.
Okay.
And what he does is everywhere he goes, he sells bats and balls, and 100% of the money goes to the charity. Guy's unbelievable.
Yep. Anyway.
Hey, did you introduce us today? I'm just playing with my neighbors right now.
Yes, I did.
So we're all ready to rock and roll?
Yeah, we are.
We're rocking and rolling already.
And I think we got to start with the World Series.
The World Series.
Man, oh, man. And to think, if I had told you whenever, beginning of the season last year, or certainly in 2017, that in order to survive in the World Series and not go down three games to none, the Astros have the unenviable, the mountain, they got to climb the mountain and somehow beat Anibal Sanchez. In game
Can you imagine?
Three, we'd all fallen off our chairs, but that's what they must do. They must find a way with Zach Greinke to beat the indomitable Anibal Sanchez, who looked as dead as a pitcher can, I mean, career
there
dead.
There is no way that he can be your mainstay for game number three in the World Series. I saw him pitch a week or so ago. I can't believe he's getting by with the same stuff he had here. Maybe he's healthier. Maybe that's the thing. Maybe his control has gotten a little bit better. But like I said at the end of his career, or looked like at the end of his career, God, everybody was going to release him anyway.
Yeah.
I said he was wild, but not out of the strike zone, in the strike zone. Everything you threw was belt high.
Yeah.
And when you start doing that, bad things start to happen.
So wild means
I don't want to over exaggerate here, but he made me want to pick up a bat when he was with the Tigers. And my daughter Kelly would just call me up out of the blue and rag on me. I hate this guy Sanchez. He couldn't get me out. I mean, it's an amazing transformation. Denny, you said on the last show that this pitching would dominate the series, and I told you no. That both of these ball clubs have great offenses, and we saw what happened in Game 2, especially with all the runs the Nationals put up on the board.
I think the Game 1 result was more amazing with Gerrit Cole going down.
The thing about it is, first of all, you got four real good pitchers. I think they're the top four in the league. But here's the key. Anything can happen. It's the World Series. Verlander's 0-5 in World Series ball games. 0-5. Hasn't even come close to winning a ball game in a World Series.
Well, he didn't win a game when Houston won the World Championship? Of course he did.
No, he didn't.
Right?
He did not. He was 0-5.
Well, on me. Okay.
He's 0-5 so far. And here's the thing that got my attention real early in that ball game. The home plate umpire was really calling things really tight.
Doug Ennings.
Huh. And Verlander looked at him and said a couple of things. Cole looked at him a number of times and said a couple of things. Hitters were saying things to him.
No, not Cole. Not Cole last night. It was Strasburg.
Strasburg. And by the way, that beard.
They all got ugly beards. What do you think of Rendon's
bad-looking beard?
They're all bad.
Scraggly all over his face.
I think the home plate umpiring has been horse manure throughout much of this series. And, folks, if you don't think this is going to hasten the use of computers and nothing more than computers behind home plate within the next five years, certainly within 10 years, you're wrong about
that. I agree.
No. That's not going to happen.
Too many pitches.
I agree. The first batter that Max Scherzer faced in game one was George Springer. And it was a 3-2 count, and Scherzer threw an absolutely perfect up and in 87-mile-an-hour something, probably a changeup, perfectly in the corner, ball four, led to two runs.
First of all, you don't throw an 87-mile-an-hour changeup up and in. You throw an 87-mile-an-hour changeup down at the knees.
It was something 87. I'm not saying it was a changeup.
Could have been a hanging slider, hanging curveball. Anything up is a hanging.
But it was a strike.
Wait a minute. Danny, wait a minute. Bregman took a changeup at the knees and deposited it about 500 feet off Strasburg.
That's okay.
So you can't, that's not a
that's all right.
No,
listen, first of all, try to understand one thing. I know a little bit more about hitting and pitching than you do. When you've got good hitters, good hitters can hit the ball inside. That's their strength. That's the reason why they're in the big leagues, because it's tough to get them out with hard fastballs inside, especially with two strikes, because the good hitters shorten up their swings. Now, as far as the rest of the guys go, there are a lot of mediocre hitters still in the major leagues. But the difference is everybody's ready for the best-looking pitching they've seen all season long. Yes, my surprise, 12 runs. But look what happened in the seventh inning. It was a fluke. A couple of booted ground balls. They called one a base hit. Guys throwing the ball away. I mean, things like that happen.
Both things that Bregman did. Bregman, a ground ball to his left went off his glove. Could have made the play, called it a hit. And then on a little grounder down to third base, he threw wild first.
You guys are bringing up so many good points here. It's like, blah, 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 I got to catch up with you right here. So you want to talk about Bregman, since he was the last guy you mentioned. He did hit that dramatic home run. Camera goes in the dugout, and there he is. He's looking at the camera. He's styling. He's holding up four fingers.
Yeah, what did the four mean?
400, baby. 400 feet. Baseball is a game of failure, and it turns around on people real quickly. You do something good in baseball or any sport, shut up. Because you might be on the losing end
quickly. Well, listen, two or three innings later, you're going to strike out. Right?
Yeah.
So you hit a home run the first time, then you strike out nine hitters later. Now you look like the horse's ass because you're promoting yourself to begin with.
All right, now let's move backwards again, because Eli brought up George Springer. Now in game one,
Springer.
It's 5-3 Nats, bottom of the eighth, runner on second. Mm-hmm. Springer hits a high fly ball
and watches
to deep right. And he hops down the first baseline, admiring his home run, except it doesn't get out of the ballpark.
This is happening a lot. Yeah. This is happening a lot. Dead ball.
He second base, not third base,
right,
where he could have scored on a sack fly, on a wild pitch, on a pass ball. I mean, you know, this is just bad baseball, especially by Houston in both games so far.
Did I miss something? Yes. Did anybody say anything about him doing the dog trot?
Yes. In fact, Hinch excused him for it. Springer said later that he wouldn't have made it to third anyway. But no.
What?
It's a great excuse, right?
He should have run it out.
Yeah.
This is happening a lot, and more so, as they say, and you dispute the dead ball, maybe so, but a lot of home runs that look like they're going out are barely going out. And wasn't it?
Barely going out? What the hell is the difference of going out and barely going out?
Was it Ryan, what's his name? Zimmerman hit one that he watched also, and it hit the top of the wall and bounced over.
Yeah. So you're saying it's because of the ball?
It's because of the dead ball. Oh, that extra 5 feet.
Dead ball, it's still going 400 feet.
Anyway.
Even our beloved Jose Altuve last night, he's on second base already. Why is he trying to steal third early in the game?
Absolutely.
Because he's already in scoring position. Suzuki's a terrific catcher. And there was a left-handed hitter at the plate, giving Suzuki a clear open shot at third base, and he threw him out.
But it's better than that. Altuve can run like a deer. I mean, he runs like
hell.
But
you don't steal in that position.
He doesn't have to steal third base. First of all, the guy up should be trying to move him over to third base to start with. If he gets a base hit, that's great. But you're going to get him to third anyway. Well, not this time.
This is interesting. So, you know, when that happened, I go, man, Suzuki. And he's blocking pitches. He's an amazing defensive catcher, 36 years old, really kicked around a little bit, never made big money. He's on a 2-year contract worth $5 million a year. He was playing for a lot less before that. So I'm looking him up to say, man, I got such respect for catchers and their accuracy and how they block pitches, and they're in that squad all the time. And then he's hitting 0-43, all right?
Yeah.
1-for-23, and here's what he does in the seventh inning off the one and only Justin Verlander to change the game.
Here's one hammered into left. Off the bat of Suzuki and gone. Nationals jump back on top. It's 3-2 here in the seventh.
So anyway, that was a solo home run. That put him up 3-2, and then it started to implode for Verlander.
Yeah. And let me defend Verlander for just a second. Just a second. Although this is his ballpark he was playing in last night. When you go out there in a big ball game, your adrenaline at times is running away. I think that was part of his problem. He wanted to pitch so well that he was ready to jump up and down. Your timing is a little bit different in a game like this. the visiting teams really do have some problems because the rubbers that they pitch off of sometimes are worn, and you got to find a comfortable place. That's what I think happened to the Nats. But there are other elements that enter into it, the crowd and some of the other things, people screaming and hollering at you. But that's a defense for Verlander. But he should have calmed down by the second or third inning. And for someone to say in 15 years he's only walked three guys on four straight pitches is absolutely outrageous.
In the first inning, to lead off the game.
And let me tell you.
Didn't he say that the fact is not a fact?
It's not a fact to lead off the game. It's impossible.
You have an alternate fact that he didn't
Well, I have an alternate fact. I don't have an alternate fact. Here's, I got one of mine. The first major league game I ever pitched, I walked the first guy on four pitches. And then he went to first base, obviously. I picked him off. The third hitter that came up, I walked on four pitches and picked him off. So it happens. You're going to throw four pitches in a row. Three times in 15 years, impossible.
Anyway, they were complimenting Verlander.
I know what they were doing, but I'm telling you, the fact is not correct.
Okay, that's fine. And it really doesn't matter. But I think the bigger picture that we're all talking about here is the records. And Gerrit Cole had been 19-0 and hadn't given up a run in the last 7 years, whatever. It is amazing stuff. Cy Awards, pending MVPs, like Bregman, doesn't matter. And you get to the World Series, strange stuff can happen, and it's a fascination. And to see guys like Soto, I wasn't aware of Soto, didn't see a lot of Washington this year. To be presented or to see or to really get to enjoy players like this at this time of year with this pressure is really fascinating.
Well, you're not watching your beloved Mets anymore, are you? Because you guys had trouble earlier this year. We were talking about Anthony Rendon. You'd never heard of him. Denny'd never heard of Trey Turner on the last show. You're not watching a lot of baseball. Now, Eli, you said that's the bigger picture. Here's the biggest picture. Joe Buck comes on in game one, and he's talking about the starters. And a lot of the idiots in the media were actually writing and saying, this could be the greatest starting pitching in the history of the World Series. So Buck says about Max Scherzer, quote, if you haven't seen him pitch before, well, Max Scherzer's 35 years old.
He's been around
if you haven't seen him pitch before, it means you don't watch baseball. If you don't watch baseball, it means you hate baseball. And we have, I haven't seen game two yet, but we have the ratings in for game one, tied a record low in the history of World Series television ratings. I was the guy who said on the last show, well, it is the World Series. It doesn't matter what markets are involved because everybody watches the World Series. Not so. The ratings on Fox are in the tank, and you wonder what this portends for baseball.
People, there's 4,000 baseball games a year.
Yeah.
Each one isn't quite what football is, or maybe even some other sports that play fewer games. Baseball is still immensely popular. Before we put it away, Johnny Smoltz. You got to love Lansing's Johnny Smoltz.
I got one more thing, but go ahead.
The guy, and he's, I'm not saying he's smart. He's a Hall of Famer. He's a terrific guy, but he fractures the language in ways that really, I just, oh my God. In the beginning, he's talking about the ball in his hands, meaning which opinion goes hands on the ball. That can happen to anybody. But then he does. Then when Bregman hits the home run, he didn't miss it. That one, as you know, drives me crazy.
Yeah.
And here's another one I brought up. You know, when guys say talking about, you know, defensive backs, we're not talking about it at all. He goes, if I'm the Washington Nationals pitching staff, when an announcer goes, if I'm, you know, if I'm the Patriots backfield, shut up. You're not. You're one guy. You're not an entire team. That one drives me crazy too.
Well, I do want to congratulate the Astros, though, because they have built a great ball club despite a bunch of lying morons running their front office. General manager.
Who, the Astros?
Assaults those
the Astros?
Girls.
Are you talking about the Astros?
Yes, I am.
Oh, by the way.
You can do the story,
but listen to me. They're down 2-0.
That's not my point.
Oh.
My point is, I presume you guys know this.
Yes, when he yelled at the women.
Hours after the Astros.
You're talking about the lady?
The ladies.
Trashed a Sports Illustrated report accusing their assistant general manager, Brandon Taubman, of yelling at three women during the team's Saturday night post-celebration. The Houston Astros said the article was a complete lie, misleading and completely irresponsible, and then they retracted it.
What did he say? Though? You're not saying
I did say that.
No, you didn't tell us what he said.
You didn't say what he said to the women.
Thank God we got Osuna. I'm so effing glad we got Osuna in front of these women and reporters, the same Osuna whom the Astros signed as a free agent over the protestations of much of the sports world after MLB had handed him a 75-game suspension for violating his domestic violence and abuse policy. So this guy stands in front of three women reporters and yells, I'm so effing glad we got Osuna.
What are they thinking?
What point am I missing?
Well, here's the point. This is the Me Too era. Beyond that, this wasn't an acceptable comment before the Me Too era.
Right.
Particularly now, it's stupid, and I would fine the guy or fire him or whatever else. You got to be smarter than that. That's all. You can't embarrass
the
organization. You can't humiliate the organization and make them cover for you when you say stupid stuff like that.
And they're liars anyway. One of the women was wearing a bracelet promoting domestic violence awareness.
Yeah.
This guy saw it, and he went off promoting their signing of Osuna, who's a woman abuser.
He's been smoking some of that stuff Eli used to sell. That's all. That's all I can tell you. Listen,
I had to pay off my student loans.
Oh, you did. Listen, God bless you. A lot of people don't. Now, listen here. I got one more thing. There was a conversation being held before the ball game. Verlander, when his dad was around, he and his dad used to talk about situational pitching. And his dad said to him one day, he said, listen now, Justin, bases are loaded, two outs in the bottom of the ninth, the count is 3-2, you're winning 1-0, what do you do now? And I'm thinking, what does he do now? He wouldn't even be in the game. He'd have been out of the game in the seventh inning, for God's sakes.
Anyway.
What is he talking about?
Before we say goodbye to baseball.
Joe Buck wouldn't make a pimple on a broadcaster's ass.
Yeah, well, Brandon was saying he's starting to warm up to Joe Buck after all these years.
Making $7 million a year.
That's all?
He's becoming a little bit more likable. He's very self-deprecating. He kind of liked that with people.
What was the shirt he saw?
In game one, behind home plate, there was a guy wearing a T-shirt that said, Joe Buck sucks. And Joe Buck responded and said, hey, where can I get one of those? So,
speaking of before game one, got to do this. This was from the archives. This is in the New York Times this week. From the archives, game one classic before game one. In 68, pitchers duel, one starter's aim was on the mark. It's about the Bob Gibson and Denny McClain. Each won the 68 Cy Young Award in their respective leagues.
I was
faced
there.
Faced each other in the series.
I don't understand what you're saying. You said one pitcher was on the mark. Who was the pitcher who wasn't on the mark?
Well, Denny apparently was the one that wasn't on the mark. So anyway, deep in the article it goes, after praising Gibson, because he did strike out 17 and set
that's all he struck out was 17
goes,
that day.
McClain, the 24-year-old man-child of Detroit, the musician and self-styled mercenary.
Man-child?
Man-child and self-styled mercenary soldier. Then it goes, he had said apparently, the Cardinals clubhouse bulletin board for his remark, I want to humiliate the Cardinals. Did you say that?
No.
Well, it was on the bulletin board, so you said it, obviously.
Does that sound like me?
Yes, it does sound like you. Then it says, on the eve of the battle, he even packed the lobby of a downtown hotel by sitting at an organ in a lounge and giving an impromptu recital. He played appropriate mood music like Stardust, then soared into ad-lib rock tempos. Then this afternoon he met Gibson. Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, we played Motown all night till 2:30 in the morning, for God's sakes. None of us could find our ass with both hands the following morning before we got to the park. I mean, the whole club was there. The whole club was there. Everybody was, you know, we weren't doing what Eli used to sell, but we were doing what he drank.
Wait a minute. But it was a day game. Are you up all night for a day game the next day?
2:30 in the morning.
You
know why we had to leave at 2:30? The bar closed at 2.
Let me ask you a question.
What?
You're sitting there in this era wearing your Nehru jackets with medallions and white turtlenecks. You're playing Montavini or whatever they are, Sinatra. While Eli and I are involved in a major cultural revolution. We'll listen to the airplane. We're doing our thing. Were you aware that the 1960s were even going on around you, Denny?
Yeah, I was. Yes, I was. And we did a lot of Motown stuff. That's what we did.
And by the way, they had riots in Detroit in 67. They were well aware of what was going on.
We were aware, believe you.
Musically.
Anyway.
Culturally.
There's
other things.
There's some crazy reports out there like Jim Harbaugh's leaving Michigan, et cetera, et cetera. I want to get into that and a lot more football. But, hey, great eyesight is a lifestyle gift we all seek and cherish. We make our sacrifices all the time with glasses and contacts and having cleaning them and getting new prescriptions and poking your finger in the eye every day. morning and night to take those contacts out. Why not have 20/20 near and far vision for life without glasses and contacts in a safe, reliable, state-of-the-art procedure you can get from the Yaldo Eye Center, Michigan's premier eye clinic? 100 or so of Red Shovel listeners have already gone there, gotten the free evaluation, gotten either custom LASIK or multifocal lens replacement, which gets rid of reading the need for reading glasses for the rest of your life. Find out what works for you. The evaluation is free. Only thing you stand to lose are your contacts and your glasses. Get the best and pay the least. Dr. Yaldo will gladly beat any competing offer you may get. 1-800-398-EYES. That's 800-398-EYES. Or go to YaldoEyeCenter.com.
And now our good friends at Hall Financial. Hall Financial has received nearly 800 five-star reviews from their happy clients, and they're on a mission to hit 1,000 in this year, 2019. David's team of mortgage pros gives every client VIP service, ensuring they feel like a name and not a number. What if I told you that Hall Financial will not only walk you through the process of buying your home, but provide you with a top realtor in your area? Who doesn't want that type of full service? Hall Financial knows how to deliver five-star service. That means your schedule, availability at night and on the weekends. They're going to work for you. And you won't be charged hidden extra fees of any kind. You know what you're getting when you work with Hall Financial. Call them today at 248-308-5000 if you're looking to purchase or refi. Or chat with them online at davidhallmortgage.com. Give Hall Financial a chance today. Equal housing lender number 1467435. The phone number 248-308-5000.
And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. One quick baseball note. David Ross,
that's ridiculous.
New Cubs manager, never been a manager at any level.
At any level.
I'm glad you mentioned that, and here's why. Because I looked at the ESPN website, as I do every morning of my life, and I see two of the headlines. Joe Girardi is going to manage the Phillies. And here's the other headline. Padres hire Rangers Tingler. Who the hell is that? They're firing and hiring so many managers, so many young guys, unknown guys. You can't even keep up with it, and I don't even care anymore. It's like it's almost not news.
Well, it's the irony is they come from so many different walks of life. In other words, you got Mike Schilt, the Cardinals manager, who spent 45 years from high school coach to win 40 years in the organization, working from this level. Then you got a guy like David Ross. He was a special consultant for Theo Epstein in Chicago.
He was.
Never managed a day.
And he almost won Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
So he's that's more personal. Important than a baseball game.
Anyway, this story yesterday, you sent me an article on it. I hadn't heard it, and then I started doing a little more research on it.
On Harbaugh.
Harbaugh. And, you know, the website is called Football Scoop.
Right.
So I've never heard of Football Scoop. Doesn't mean it's not legitimate. Never heard
of
it, though. But, you know, it makes no sense. It's a speculation with no backing. They said sources tell Football Scoop that Harbaugh's representatives have their eye on getting their client back in the NFL. Do you think that at this point of the football season, I'm asking you this, not that they have information or not, who knows who's going to be an NFL coach next year? Who's going to be fired? What teams are going to need? Why would they be looking now into being an NFL coach next year? It makes no sense. Harbaugh is too busy doing this, and he says, so he writes a letter.
Oh, no.
I think it's mindless
speculation. No. His agents are we all have had agents in broadcasting. A lot of times our agents are talking to stations, and we have no idea that they're talking to them. It doesn't surprise me that his agents behind Harbaugh's back would be sending out feelers. It doesn't mean Jimmy said, hey, check out potential NFL jobs.
And, you know, his guys may have been sitting in a cocktail lounge and somebody said a little loud, well, you know, maybe he regrets the idea that he took the Michigan job at this point. You know, not only did he fight this back, but he said a lot of things in this quick letter that he wrote. He says, I don't have an agent or representative. Our enemies are trying to disrupt our program. First of all, what program? Why would they disrupt? They are not really ranked in any special place, are they? Jim's panties appear to be on a little tight for him to go.
He got real loud, by the way.
Well,
that letter went out to the parents of current Wolverine players.
Right.
And don't forget,
and the media.
If disaster happens the rest of the way, it just might not be Harbaugh's decision whether he goes to the NFL or he stays at Michigan, because Michigan might make that decision for him.
Well, that's
I'm going to say it again. They'll never fire him.
No, we'll see.
That was my question. I wrote here, Who will quit on who first? Will Michigan quit on Harbaugh, or will Harbaugh quit on Michigan?
So, I don't think he'll quit.
I don't know. But, okay, so then I think it's mindless speculation. But then, of course, since the mindless speculation is made by Football Scoop, now a website called The Spun has to follow it up and say, the five coaches who could replace Harbaugh at Michigan. Oh. So now we have the coaches that are going to replace him for the job that he hasn't sought necessarily yet, and here are five of the coaches.
Isn't it unbelievable?
Matt Campbell, Iowa State, of course. Matt Rhule, Baylor, of course he'd be logical. Stanford's David, I'd like to see David Shaw. Bob Stoops would be great, too.
Stoops. Course,
yeah. And anyway, P.J. Fleck.
How old is Stoops? Stoops is in his 60s now, isn't he? I think he is. Yep. 61, 62. I don't know.
I think longevity.
I think anybody'd want the Michigan job, though.
Hell yes.
It's well, the expectations are pretty high, and the odds of you know, upsetting or unseating Ohio State is pretty tough. I tell you, and by the way, after this weekend, of Big Ten football, where Michigan is a 1-point underdog to Notre Dame. Of course, that's not a Big Ten
it's
game.
It's hard to believe.
Penn State's at Michigan State. Penn State, I think, what's Penn State's? Six and a half.
Second of
a favorite at Michigan State.
And that's a little surprising. You'd think it'd be more.
And Wisconsin's at Ohio State, which was looking like a great game until Wisconsin somehow got upset by Illinois last week. It could be, we're saying, after this weekend, and now there's just one. And that's Ohio State.
Again.
The big one and the little 13.
That's what it is right now. Yeah. So you've got this Notre Dame game on national TV Saturday night from Ann Arbor. And this is the battle of the quarterbacks, two controversial quarterbacks. Ian Book of Notre Dame has a lot of detractors, which is leading his teammates to constantly defend him in the media, saying that, well, Book may not have big numbers, but he makes up for it in leadership. You could say the same thing about Shea Patterson. ND 5-1. Ranked 8th in the country, but the only real game they played was at Athens, a tough 23-17 loss to Georgia. Who do you guys like in that game Saturday night?
I think Michigan can – not going to believe I'm going to say this because I'm a big Notre Dame guy. I think the only chance Michigan has is if Patterson runs his ass off. I don't think he can stand back there and throw the ball. I don't think he's got that ability. I think he's got to run like hell as often as he can.
I'm putting it on Josh. If Josh Gattis has the balls to call the plays in the second half that he did in the first half, they got a chance. Can I go back?
And is there any momentum, by the way, from that second half? That's a good point.
Yeah, good point.
Of course, you guys disagree with me. I think this thing from the Scoop is BS. It's a real stretch, the whole Harbaugh thing. But now Adam Schechter, who's a really respected NFL, reporter.
There's another story about it?
Yes. No. Oh, he says he's speculating that Brady may be leaving the Patriots as a free agent. Why? Because he's in the final year of his contract that he can opt out of, and his house is for sale. What a ridiculous, nonsensical stretch. My house has been for sale, and I didn't leave town. I went to a different house in the same town.
By the way, which house are we talking about? Which one of the six?
All kinds, yeah.
His trainer also put his house
yes.
for sale.
That's right. The trainer put his house for sale, too.
Let me ask you a question. I read a story, and vaguely I read this story this morning, about his son saying that it's time for him and Belichick to knock off the partnership.
Who knows?
But I read it. I couldn't believe it. The sun is now popping off.
So Schechter adds the trainers put his house for sale. Brady's put his house for sale, and he's a free agent. That's nonsense. At age 43, and by the way, the Patriots are 7-0. They've never looked any better. The way they tore apart the Jets, who had just beaten Dallas convincingly the week before. Maybe this is the best Patriot team ever. So sure, he's going to leave the Patriots for some startup somewhere that needs a quarterback.
And he just signed a new extension for another $23
million. Yeah, so anyway good.
Now, I want to talk about a very big game for Jim Harbaugh in Michigan that nobody's talking about.
Which one?
And I don't mean the Notre Dame game, MSU. Which is huge. I don't mean the Michigan State game at Ann Arbor.
What do you mean, Bob? What do you
huge.
Mean as you're building the build it up further? What do you mean, Bob?
November 23rd, Saturday at Indiana. Indiana is 4-2 this year. That's a very competitive team. Mm-hmm. They're going to a game at Nebraska on Saturday. The following Saturday, November 30th, Michigan obviously plays Ohio State. You don't think they might be looking past Indiana, which we saw Wisconsin do against Illinois last Saturday? That Indiana game could be a real problem for Michigan, but we'll see. Just point it out. That's all.
Indiana played really well against Michigan State. I was so impressed with that little freshman quarterback.
But you know, everything seems so anticlimactic when you talk about playing MSU and playing Notre Dame and playing Ohio State.
The rest just don't seem to care.
Right. Well, Bob's right, though.
That's my point.
There could be a couple of sticklers in there.
Yeah. Now let's talk about my alma mater. We have Penn State at Michigan State, 3:30 Saturday afternoon. I don't have that much to say about it. Penn State, as we know, coming off the huge win over Michigan. State had a bye. They should be well rested. Injuries healing. Michigan State could beat Penn State. I said that the other day, and you laughed at me. Yep. No, I don't know. They could. They could. I'm not saying they will. If you put a gun to my head, Penn State's
going to win. I am not impressed with Penn State. I don't think they have nearly the athletes Michigan has, and I think they could easily fall at Michigan State this week.
Meanwhile, now back to my continuing broken record about Michigan State. This time we have before us former Michigan State star defensive lineman Malik McDowell, who on Wednesday of this week pleaded guilty in court to assault, resisting arrest, drunk driving, driving a stolen car, and concealing stolen property. He will be sentenced on November 13th. I don't hear stories like this, which are almost constant out of Mark D'Antonio's program with guys. I don't hear stories like this coming out of Michigan.
Can I ask you a question, though? Wasn't Malik supposed to go to Michigan and then changed his mind? So he could have been Michigan's problem. He could have been Michigan's problem.
Yeah, he's from Southfield, Michigan, a suburb of Detroit. He wanted to go to Michigan State. His mother wouldn't let him. She wouldn't sign. She wouldn't sign. And so that reopened the recruitment, and finally the forces behind him, other forces, prevailed, and he was allowed to go to Michigan State. He didn't want to go to Michigan. But I don't hear stories like this involving ex-Michigan players. I don't hear ex-Notre Dame players. I don't. It's just more the same from Mark D'Antonio's football program at Michigan State with some of the bad actors he's had in there over the years.
Federal judge has ordered, as you know, D'Antonio to face seven. How do they know it's going to be seven hours of questioning?
Well, they'll cut it off at seven.
Okay, but anyway, on the whole Curtis Blackwell on that.
You got that many questions? Seven hours?
Well, if you put four attorneys in a room, you got 28 hours.
Yeah.
And if the answer is just no comment, that's going to be a lot of questions for 7 hours.
Oh, you know what the best answer is? Gosh, I don't recall today.
Anyway, interesting because if D'Antonio is fired or retires before January 15th, 2020, as we said, he's not due the $4.3 million bonus due him, but he would receive a $7 million buyout. So the future of Mark D'Antonio will be an interesting story once this season's
over. No charity dinners for Mr. D'Antonio.
We got more. I tell you, a huge blow to Tom Izzo in the program with Joshua Langford. I want to get into that.
Here's what I want to get into. I know you want to go to a commercial break. I wanted to get into the team that Denny refers to as we versus my beloved New York Giants in Detroit on Sunday. So
that'll
you go to
very
commercial.
Interesting. Yes. Hey, from the power and luxury of Navigator to the whisper silent interior of the brand new Corsair, Hoot McInerney's lineup of Lincoln SUVs is as good as it gets. Lincoln SUV sales are up over 20% in 2019, thanks also to two other stunning new entries in the market, Aviator and Nautilus. I love my Nautilus for its comfort features, the crisp 14-speaker Revel audio, and this Copilot 360. It's got something called pre-collision assist. I've told you twice. I've been warned about potential accidents that I might have missed. I had to look up and realize a car had stopped in front of me. That is a great feature, too. I brought my it's a family business started over 50 years ago by Hoot, the late auto icon. His family carries on the tradition of luxury with a spotless dealership and the renowned star treatment. So come see the best line of American SUVs. Buy online with the effortless ownership experience at starlincoln.com. Order your model, your features, whatever you want. Pick it up. Hoot McInerney, Star Lincoln at 12 and Telegraph in Southfield. And for 20 years, Luke Nowacki has worked with individuals, families, and business owners. He's helped them gain clarity about their financial situation and peace of mind about the future. If you're a retiree, thinking about how am I going to retire and make sure my family is covered and I'm covered, just call Luke, 248-663-4748. Most people spend 45 minutes or less on their investments every year. Get a guy who will look over your portfolio every day and make sure you are where you need to be. He'll create a plan to help you reach your financial goals. The consultation is complimentary. He'll answer all your questions. So, yes, whether it's retirement or young and need to balance and plan for future obligations, life happens. Let Luke Nowacki help you out. That's 248-663-4748, Pinnacle Wealth Management. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates, Inc. Other marketing names, products, and services referenced here are independent of Royal Alliance Associates. And you are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So, Joshua, this is a really sad story about Joshua Langford. It's definitely
well, it is, but he's been hurt a lot. And the Giants is a bigger story.
Now, do you think, though, that they would have been number one in the preseason poll if they'd known that about Langford? Not that it matters.
Yeah, because he was hurt a lot of last year, and they played really, really well without him. He's an important part of the Michigan State basketball team, but he's not utterly critical to their success. They'll be fine without him.
Okay. Good to know.
They do open here in New York. Michigan State officially named number one in the country last week.
Yep.
Number two was Kentucky. They play Kentucky to start the season November 5th down the street from me at Madison Square Garden.
That's their first game?
Be there or be square.
Yeah, that's their first game?
Yeah, first game of the season.
Great game. Oh, I like that better than football playing St. Ellis's, right? Ooh. St. Ellis's.
St. Ellis.
All girls school.
Jeez. you want to talk about the Giants-Lions matchup this week?
Yeah, let's do this,
Bob. I want to talk about Denny's Lions matchup against the Giants. Yes, go ahead, Denny. What would you like to say?
Well, 5 out of 6 times the Giants have kicked the ass of our Lions.
That means nothing.
It means nothing, of course, because we have to play the
Lions
game anyway. What do you mean, my Lions?
Your Lions, not mine.
Let's say this. The season for the Lions is over. It's done. They can't go 7-3 or 8-2, whatever the hell it has to be. Right, they can't do that. So all this really means is Stafford gets to put up another 10,000 yards of passing, and Patricia will make more promises. Of course, during his press conference the other day, he said the following. He said, you know, we have some things we need to work on. We're needing to work harder and harder. We need to communicate better, Patricia said. And then he said, I've got to coach better. Wow.
Well, that's you know, that's fine. He's supposed to say that. You know,
right, let me say this.
Why are you so compassionate?
He's got to say that. I got to coach. He can't say the players need to play better and I'm coaching great. Now, Bobby Ross once said, I don't coach that stuff, but that's different. That's a different day and age.
But you're kissing ass here
today.
I'm not
kissing his ass. What are you talking about?
You don't call it what you're doing today?
I just said he has to say that. I got to coach better. What's wrong with him saying that?
He said something stronger than that.
Anyway, but I think the more interesting topic is the trade. They traded Quandre Diggs to Seattle, and look at the response for a seventh-round pick. No, they gave a seventh. They're going to get a fifth-round pick in 2020. That seems like, I don't know, a lot to give away, a starting a safety. But I guess, you know, they got the Tracy Walker and Will Harris, and they got Tavon Wilson. And I guess maybe they perceived that Diggs had sunk or slipped a little bit this year. But
they had, and they also just signed Marcus Gilchrist to replace him. And I know a lot about him because he played with the Jets for a few years. He's an undersized safety. You're not going to see a big hitter. But I think Marcus Gilchrist is a good player.
So,
I think
Bob, he is. He's kind of are your Giants going to beat our Lions?
Well, I can get into that in a second. Eli kind of took this in a different direction.
Let me ask, before we put this Quandre Diggs things aside, do you think that with the defense failing and giving up 503 yards last week and 142 yards rushing to, what's his name, Dalvin Cook, do you think this is one of those messages where you trade a popular player and to tell your defense nobody is safe here? I'll get ready if you don't play hard. Do you think it's a message thing? Look at the response. Slay writes, this is some BS here. He said the real word, though, on his Twitter thing. Jamal Agnew says, no, with a bunch of zeros. And Damon Harrison says, wow, no way. So, you know, is the message nobody is safe here until we play better? Or do you think he's just making a trade to...
That's a good question.
And I can answer the question without going through all the stats that they're screwed up with already. Each of the last four games, they've allowed more yards than the week before. Hmm. Think about that.
Okay.
Every week, they allow more and more. When does it end?
Well, it depends who you're playing, but true.
Oh, come on. This is the NFL.
Okay.
See what I mean? You're kissing everybody's ass
today. I am not.
Today.
What if they played against the Jets? Of course they're not going to give up as many yards. But I see what you're saying. Okay. I'm not saying the stat isn't real.
Right.
Okay. I'm like you like saying Verlander had never before thrown four balls to start a game, even though it's true.
It is true. But not only three times in 15 years. Excuse me.
I don't want to get back into that.
Bob, do your research. Were you with those fat fingers?
Does the floor finally now recognize the esteemed gentleman from New York.
All right, Brandon, go ahead. You're from New York.
Go ahead. What do you got?
Contrary to what Mr. McLean just said, this is a very big game for both teams. As Denny's right when he says neither's going anywhere. But this is a very winnable game for the Giants. Nobody yet calling for the former Michigan State standout Pat Shurmur's head. Oh, but they will be soon. The win against the FL's should take some heat off. Now, Golden Tate coming back to Detroit, of course, as well as former Michigan great Jabril Peppers, who starts at safety. He has surprised me with how well he's played. Didn't do that well with Cleveland, which is why they traded him to the Giants as part of the OBJ deal. And fellas, did you notice that that knucklehead was just fined $14,000 this past week?
Who was?
For failing to wear pants that Odell Beckham Jr.
Yeah, Beckham.
For failing to wear pants that covered his knees in a recent game. This is the 13th time in OBJ's career he has been fined by the NFL.
Not for dressing, just for a variety of things.
All kinds of different things. But yes, he's violated the dress code. Now, as for the FLs, this is also a very winnable game. They are going to win some games this year. You know that no matter how much fun we make them. Even a blind squirrel finds an acorn once in a while. But a victory against the Giants is going to take some heat off Patricia, who, like Shurmur, may well be gone at year's end no matter what happens on Sunday. Giants defense has not been good. Stafford should eat them up. Rumors swirling that the Giants will soon trade a couple starters as a salary dump, just as the FLs did with the aforementioned Mr. Diggs. The best player on the field Sunday afternoon, his name is Saquon Barkley, but Patricia is going to scheme for him, and the Giants maddeningly just do not seem to get the ball enough to him. So in this game, you're not going to believe this. If I had to pick, and I don't do picks, I think the FLs are going to win this game.
They're going to win this game.
They may very well win it. But you know what? The thing about it is I thought the biggest mistake the Lions have made in a long time is Golden Tate. I just thought he was a great player. Thought he was as good as a player that I'd ever seen here in Detroit. Why they got rid of him, there got to be a better reason than what they said they wanted to go after better talent.
Isn't he suspended for four games? And I'll
make a prediction, because you could be right. My prediction for this game is whoever has the ball with 1 minute or less in the ball game in the fourth quarter, that's going to be the winning team. Somebody's going to go down there and kick a field goal. I'll disagree with that
because of this. Again, I see every New York Giants game. The Giants quarterback, young Mr. Jones, has dramatically regressed since his big splash. So you can't trust that kid right now with respect to interceptions, fumbles, and stuff like that. I would trust Stafford if Stafford had the ball with a minute left, but not Jones. Well, not yet. He's going to be good, though.
Maybe this is the game where Eli Manning gets back in if they beat up Jones.
Boy, what a mess they're going to have in the New York tabloids if that happens.
And my prediction is based on the blind pig thing.
Now,
blind squirrel thing?
Blind pig.
Either one. Anyway.
Okay. What does a blind pig find once in a while?
Blind pigs find everything, including people who live in New York.
Blind squirrel. Anyway, so here's an interesting stat.
Never heard the thing.
Here's an interesting stat.
Squirrel, by the way.
Now the Lions' playoff chances mathematically are listed as 9% this week. I saw that in the whatever. Anyway, here's a stat. If a team that's 4-3 has a 51% chance of making the playoffs, a team that is 3-4 has a 14% chance. If the Lions hadn't suffered that tie in the beginning of the season, they would be 3-3 instead of 2-3-1. And if they won this game against the Giants, it would have made them 4-3. They'd have a shot.
Could you do this again so I can write this down?
No, as it is, the fact that even if they win, they're only 3-3, whereas they could have been 4-3 without the tie, they would at least be in the playoff picture. And now I don't really.
There isn't one person listening to the show.
Oh, please, come on! Was it that complicated?
You just said yes.
Okay. What else you got? I got basketball.
I never know when you're going to go to a commercial break, but yeah, that was a big, big performance by Andre Drummond in the Pistons season opener on Wednesday night. And now as we tape this, as you know, folks, Thursday morning, the home opener with Atlanta is Thursday night. And that's a club the Pistons should beat, too.
Yeah, and they were there without Blake Griffin, who They admittedly drove into the ground the last part of last season in order to try and make the playoffs, where he then wasn't available.
You just tell me when Mr. Griffin feels like playing, okay? Don't even bother mentioning the Pistons don't have him. Just tell us when he feels like playing finally.
Sometime in November, they're going to take a look at whether he can play again. But really an impressive first outing. And Drummond, who's in the last year of his contract, 32 points, 23 rebounds, 4 blocks. Here's what he had to say afterwards.
I feel good, man. You know, like I told you guys earlier this summer, I did a really good job of working on my conditioning. I knew I was going to play a lot of minutes this year. You know, it showed. The hard work I put in this summer, it showed. I played a lot of minutes and played, you know, hard all those minutes too. So overall, it's a great collective night for all of us. Derrick Rose came off the bench and played great. You know, all our guys that came off the bench that gave us minutes played great.
And basically he's saying, look, I worked really hard this summer. He didn't say it's the last year of my contract, but he seems to be in the best shape of all, and he's in for a really big payday if he has the kind of season that he's more consistent than he's been in the past, plays hard every night. There's been talk about, you know, how much effort he puts in a regular basis, so we'll see. But Derrick Rose, man, Derrick Rose, 18 points last night, but that's what he averaged last year.
And 9 assists.
Nobody wants to think that Derrick Rose can play again, because he was so many years that he was hurt, but he's a former MVP. He's healthy now, and so he's 31. He's really 28 because he's missed 2 or 3 seasons. I think this is an incredible pickup, and I really, because Reggie Jackson, I don't think we've got a ton of belief in Reggie Jackson. Derrick Rose could be one of the keys to this team.
Yeah, I said that in the last show. I think they're going to be better. I think they should make the playoffs. But still, when you look at Drummond, why would he want to come back to Detroit? This is still going to be a mediocre to, you know, pretty decent team. And Detroit, as you guys know, is just such a lovely place to spend your winters. So I don't see Drummond coming back. By the way, Luke got 30 points in that game on Wednesday night. He should help the Pistons a lot this year, a little more than he has in the past.
Well, they were picked, not that it matters, but a lot of the preseason publications picked them to miss the playoffs. They got to be in the top 8. They don't want to play Milwaukee again, but between Milwaukee, Philadelphia, Boston, Toronto, and I'd say the Nets too, the Pistons have maybe can slip into the playoffs. But we'll see. Anyway,
you know, we should go to a couple of games this year. You know,
I'll go to games. I enjoy it.
Meanwhile,
I'm not going to drag you down to a game.
You don't have to drag me. I'll go with you.
you have trouble walking. You can't go up the stairs. Come on, man.
I mean, we'll figure it out.
Meanwhile, you guys, all three of you, including our producer, Brandon, you guys got trouble right there in River City. I'll tell you that much. I mean, the Wings have just taken such a dump.
Yeah, they lost last night.
Ottawa. Yeah. They go into Ottawa. You know what Ottawa's record was?
1-6.
That game?
1-6.
1-6-1. 1-6-1. And again, they give up 5 goals. Just the way they did in the third period alone at home against Vancouver the other night, and another loss.
And when we went to see them in Anaheim, they led, and they also fell behind in that game as well.
Yeah, the Wings have lost what, 6 straight games now. They're 3-7, and I'm telling you that Jeff Blashill is not going to survive this season unless he can right the sinking ship already. This club has too much talent, too many good young players to be this embarrassing. Collapse in the third period the way they have. I think maybe the Wings are going to need a Mike Kanan type.
Haven't they kind of set us up for this? I mean, you know, they didn't promise us a Rose Garden. There used to be a song written.
Yes, that's
like
right.
That.
That's right. And Kenny Daniels said that coming in.
Right.
I agree with that.
Nobody thought they were going to just run away and hide someplace and get in the playoffs and do their thing. I mean, there was no prediction of them even getting to the playoffs.
We'll see what Dino Cicerelli has to say about it. Yeah. Watch, is he going to bring him in?
I got one other Wings note, if I can do this, guys. I went nuts a while back when the now feckless Detroit Free Press and sports sections made no mention, well, one tiny one in one of the papers, of Dan Maloney dying?
Yeah.
One of the most famous Wings players in memory? Now, I'm watching Don Cherry's Coach's Corner on Hockey Night in Canada Saturday night, as I always do, and Ronnie McLean mentions the death of former Red Wings star Danny Grant. News to me.
Scored 50 goals.
Neither the news or the Free Press mentioned that. Tuna scored 50 goals for the Wings in 74-75. He won the Calder as the NHL Rookie of the Year in 68-69. And you know what, guys? You cut to 40 years from now. When Justin Verlander dies in whatever form the free press and the news takes then, if they still exist, some young people working there will probably scratch their heads and say, who the hell is Justin Verlander? We don't have to mention him.
This happens a lot. You got young people working the desk.
And reduced staffs.
Reduced staffs. This happened 3-4 years ago when Al Ackerman died.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know,
I didn't know it.
The story on him was so factually incorrect. They didn't call anybody that worked with him like me. They didn't call you who worked with him. They had no idea.
They did. The Free Press called me. Yeah, I was quoted. Yeah.
Was I? Maybe they didn't.
I was quoted. Yeah, I think you were quoted in the Free Press.
Anyway, yeah. So this happens, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's just hard to believe. Danny Grant was a great guy.
Al was not a guy you sent Christmas cards to either.
You didn't like Al. Was Al tough on you? Yeah.
Al was a person who had a real trouble with the truth.
I don't know.
Well,
about
we're gonna
that.
Have. We got a separate show about
I do.
Al.
I could
say a lot about Al Ackerman.
I got a lot of poison pen arrows in my chest because of him.
So they replaced. I'll tell you a quick. Can I tell
go
a quick
ahead.
Ackerman story?
Go ahead. Sure.
So they replaced. We got to say goodbye to our radio people. Should I say goodbye to our radio people first? Okay.
Well, you're running the show. You decide.
Well, okay, because we're up to 50 minutes. We got to say goodbye to our radio people. So we're gonna have Dino Cicerelli. Going to tell you this story. We're gonna do a little more about basketball, but we got to say goodbye to WCWA in Toledo, and we got my mailbag too. We got to say goodbye to WDFN. You can certainly download the podcast, but you have been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So I'm hired by Al Ackerman, and I'm going to be a street reporter and do the weekends. This was in the end of 1980.
And you're excited as hell.
Excited as hell. And I loved Al Ackerman. I respected Al Ackerman. Al Ackerman was an idol of mine, along with Howard Cosell, because he was tough. He said what he thought, and he was fearless.
There was a difference between the two. Al Ackerman was kind of one of those loose guys with facts that weren't certainly facts.
Stop. He was good.
And Howard Cosell, never lose sight of the fact about Howard Cosell, as much as we all liked him. He was an entertainer first.
Well, so was Ackerman. Anyway,
I disagree with that.
In 1984.
I want to hear your story. But you remember at the top of the show when you said, I think I know a little more about pitching than you do. I think I know a little more about Al Ackerman, having worked with him, than you do.
Yeah, me too.
Well, and I think I know more about Al Ackerman than either one of you guys, because he never picked on you guys. Never lied about you guys. Otherwise, you guys wouldn't be kissing his ass here today.
Anyway, they replace him with me in June of 1984. They tell Al, you're going to only do the 6 o'clock. Ooh. Eli's going to be the new 11 o'clock guy. He was not happy.
Ooh.
And so the night that happened, I knew that he was – it was a weekend, I think. And whatever. I wasn't supposed to worry. I knew that he was going to have an excuse because he had a bad leg.
Yeah.
Anytime he didn't want to eat, he just said, I have a bad leg. Yeah. So I hid. I didn't – back then, this was pre-cell phones. I was unavailable. He did not show up that night, and they couldn't find me. And Mort Krim had to go and read the sports news, and it was pretty awful. But Al got really nasty, and he blamed me for replacing him instead of, and it was not my call. So it didn't end pretty with me and Al.
And I think you know this, the exact same thing happened to me here in New York at ABC Radio, because I replaced Howard Cosell on the Speaking of Sports commentaries, but they only gave me one. Well, Howard got to keep the other commentary, and I would see him in the ABC offices once in a while. He was really not very nice to me.
What Al would do, so you know, back then we used to read the AP wire would come on a spool. It was a spool, and so you'd read it and you'd roll it up and put it on the next guy's desk because he was there in the morning doing just the 6 o'clock. Now I'm coming in later because I'm doing the 11. And instead of rolling it back up, he would crumple it up, and on my desk would be a pile of copy that was 3 feet high, all crumpled up. And this was his way of saying, F you little son of a bitch, you took my job. And oh, God, it got ugly. Anyway, but you know what? When Bernie came in, he hated Bernie more than me, so.
Yeah, Al was very bitter at the end, no question
very
about
bitter,
that. But
yes.
I had a guy, I used to do some social services work here, and I used to spend time with a guy, Herman Felber, who had grown up with Cosell. And I can still see the late Herman sitting in his apartment telling me we were talking about Cosell. Bob, never tell me that Howard Cosell is a bitter old man. Howard Cosell was a bitter young man. We hated him.
I'll tell you one Cosell. Quick story. I was at the New York Writers' Dinner, and who do you think I had sitting to my right that night? This is the night I won the 30 ball games that year. And I'm sitting with Cosell to my right.
And all during dinner, all he's talking about is every pitcher that ever played Major League Baseball, every pitcher that ever won 25 games, 28 games, 29 games.
Regaling you with history.
Yeah, but not talking about me at all. Yeah. And finally, at the end of the dinner, he says, and I wish I could do his accent the way you do it, but he says, "And I just don't understand it. How a guy from the south side of Chicago could win 30 ball games."
I simply refuse to understand how a lowlife like you, from the south side of Chicago, no less,
that's him,
could somehow win 30 games and take the headlines away from my beloved Dodgers.
He could be very complimentary of people too.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
Well, we got sidetracked on that.
Yeah, where are we going here? I'm sorry about that. I did that with the Al Ackerman story. You want to just move on?
How about Tiger Woods?
What about Tiger
Woods? Shot 64.
Oh, really?
He's leading the tournament. He's got three more days to go, but he's leading the tournament. And
you know, I'm glad
one
you
other,
mentioned
one other
that,
quick
guy.
Thing about golf. Rory, who was one of the great stars on the tour right now, is thinking about giving up the European tour because the golf courses over there are too easy.
Really?
And he says, "I'm complaining about shooting 17 under par, and I'm 30th. Yeah. He said, "Does that make sense?"
So I'm glad you mentioned that, as I said, because I have a golf question for you two experts there. Tried to get it on the last show, ran out of time. Know about Leanne Walker? What
no.
happened to her?
Who's she?
At French Lick Resort in Indiana a couple weeks ago.
Larry
it's
Bird's
the
hometown.
Senior LPGA Championship. And Walker shot rounds of 85 and 74. But that was only before she realized that players no longer can putt when their caddies have been standing directly behind them. So she had to add 42 penalty shots to her first round. That turned that into a 127 and 16 more in the second round, meaning that she shot a 90. So this is a new rule in golf. Fellas, what is the problem with a caddy standing behind a golfer lining up a putt?
Well, first of all,
first
of all, she didn't make the cut.
I guess not.
No, there's a lot wrong with that because the golfer has to line up the putt.
Yeah.
Why can't the caddy go and say, "No, move your club a little bit this way because you're lined up a little bit left"? You can't do that. You can't stand behind.
They stood behind the guys and said, "No, I think it's going to break right."
And by the way,
then they move before the guy hits the ball.
Right.
Of course, they help him line it up. They help him pick the club, get the distance, the wind, all the factors. But then when he hits the ball, you got to move out of the way.
And they look for the undulation on the green to make sure that the guy sees it. They have conversations all the time. But when he starts to get over the ball,
you got to get out of the way.
Caddy's got to get the hell out of the way.
Hell yes.
You can't do it anymore, at least not on the LPGA.
The whole thing in the NBA with the whole China thing has been very difficult to sort, and a lot of crazy stuff going on. But an interesting conversation, I think, boiled it down on NBA opening night when you had Shaquille O'Neal defending Daryl Morey. He's the Houston general manager that defended Hong Kong's right for freedom. And Shaq says Daryl Morey was right. Whenever you see something going on wrong anywhere in the world, you should have the right to say that's not right. That's what he did. A lot of people feel that way. But Barkley, very interestingly, said, no, he was out of line. He's an employee. We all have a responsibility to our employer, Barkley said. I can't come on TV and say anything I want to politically. I can't do that. His allegiance, meaning more, is to the Rockets and the NBA. And if he can quit, if he's not happy with it. And, you know, I agree with that because everybody was blindsided by this. Adam Silver was. It's cost the league potentially billions because China is now ripping Silver right and left. The state-run China television saying it's ugly for the president of internationally influential sports league to openly make up a lie because he claimed that they had requested that he discount the tweet. So really, really ugly. And I agree with Barkley more than Shaq. Yes, the timing was awful. You don't do it when the NBA is going to China and say something inflammatory like that to an oppressive regime that doesn't enjoy the freedoms we have when there's business at stake. And so that's Barkley's thing. You're going to speak about freedom? You can. But at this time, when we're involved in these negotiations and a financial arrangement, you shouldn't do that.
Measure everybody's word by word. You got to measure everything right now.
Well, it's always been that way. And I don't really have a problem with this. If you work for somebody, you have to adhere to the rules. Now, sure. We call this the no filter sports show, but we do have a filter. Sure. We agreed, the three of us, a long time ago, not to ever talk about religion or politics on this show because you can't win. You can't win.
Right.
So why this guy did this? Because he wasn't going to win.
Well, I don't think he did. I don't think he did it on purpose in the sense that he was trying to be mean-spirited. I don't think he was trying to teach China a lesson. I think he just misspoke in a grand way, and everybody picked it up, and there it goes. Why world of sports?
He tweeted it. It was really poor timing at that
terrible
time. Now, it's interesting also that Silver said at a Time magazine event, Adam Silver, the commissioner, that the Chinese government urged him to fire Maury for his tweet. Silver said he refused to do that, and now Chinese television is saying, no, we never asked him to do that. We never told him to do that. The Chinese government has never made this kind of request. There's all types of animosity, and it's going to cost a lot of people a lot of money. And they canceled the first slate of games that we show. They only showed the Laker-Clippers game. Yeah.
All right, I got another NBA tidbit, and this one's going out to Dennis Dale McClain. So listen carefully, Denny. I know Brandon's seen this. I've seen it. Bet you guys haven't. The video's about 2 weeks old. It's Golden State Warriors preseason. They're on the basketball floor, and Draymond's standing there with none other than Jordan Poole, the former University of Michigan standout drafted by Golden State. So as the cameras roll and the microphones are up there, Draymond demands Jordan Poole sing the Michigan State fight song.
Michigan State.
So it was very funny. The kid can't sing at all. It must have been funny when Tom Brady welcomed Brian Hoyer to the New England Patriots.
Wouldn't he ask him to sing the Michigan fight song? Why would he ask him to sing the Michigan State fight song?
Because Jordan Poole went to Michigan. How humiliating having to sing the Michigan State fight song.
I wouldn't be able to sing the Michigan State fight song. I don't know it, except for
I'll teach it to you someday.
No, thanks.
Anyway, so Tom Brady made Brian Hoyer stand up and do the same thing when Hoyer went to New England, and Hoyer had to stand up and sing in front of the whole team, "Hail to the Victors." Denny, when you had rookies come to the Detroit Tigers and your other clubs, did you have any initiation rites for them?
Yeah, little things. Get our coffee, get our Coca-Colas or Pepsi, fix the hot dog with the ketchup, don't do it wrong, that type of stuff. The best one was, and this was Cash starting all this stuff, he would throw his underwear in the middle of the room and say, "Rook, get my underwear, give it to John Hand, let John Hand take care of it from there, but you pick it up." And the guy would say, "Why do I have to pick it up?" "Because I'm Norm Cash."
"And you're a rookie." Listen, I want to get to Dino Ciccarelli. Let's do the mailbag and move on, okay? Put all your stories aside, Bob, please. We'll save them for next time.
And see how we make all this stuff up on the run, folks. This is how we do
things. Let's go. Mailbag.
You want to get to Dino now and do the mailbag afterwards?
No, let's do the mailbag now.
Here we go.
Let's do an abbreviated mailbag. By the way.
Okay, so we have a couple tweets up front here. This is from Mike Howell, and we always love to hear this from some people out there. "Keep bringing it, guys. I am normally not a fan of sports guests, but you've had some good ones." David Bombo writes, "I hope you guys have as much fun doing these shows as we have listening to them. Great show." David, we actually do. We actually have a lot of fun doing this stuff. All right. So we have Dave Jones. "Thanks, Eli, Denny, and Bob. And thank you for not doing the Lions' poorly officiated Monday night game to death. I know they've moved on, played other games. I feel like you guys are missing the most important points. Of course, this would not have been an issue if the Lions had just converted those TDs. They would have won the game." Yes, Dave, you get it. And they would have won the game. If only. So on and so forth. This is, what else? "Love the show." And Dave closes with, "Go Nats." Dave, they heard you.
I heard him too.
And he predicted. In fact, Brandon was saying beforehand they were down. Were they down 2-0?
They were down 2-0.
And he predicted them, and you've been looking pretty good so far. Considering they have to win a wild card game just to get into the playoffs.
Just to play.
Here's Tom Bell from Chicago. He's originally from Benton.
You could say, "Nice going, Denny."
"Nice going, Denny."
Thank you, Bob. I already said that.
Do I have to keep?
Every week.
I mean, like next spring when spring training starts. And it was Dennis McClain who predicted the Washington. You know, I mean, give me a break. Listen up, fellas. A lot of stuff here directed to you, too. Tom Bell is from Chicago, originally from Fenton, Michigan, up near Flint. guys, great pod. I think your show is great. Best parts, balance of old Detroit nostalgia and current commentary. Objectively calling BS on the sacred cows like Michigan, Illich, Bow, Tigers, etc. Good pace on each subject, and he loves the fact.
That's our pace. Wow.
Pace of the show. He loves the fact that we made another decision on this show when we first started not to take callers. Tom says, I do not want to hear Gary from Frazier and his dumb ideas about the Lions. Eli, who among your broadcasting peers on set were most informed about sports? Any anchors who were really good talking about sports? Who was the worst or most uninterested in sports?
Well, the most uninterested is a guy that I really, really love and admire, and that's Mort Krim. And Mort just didn't like sports, and that's okay. He would introduce me to some generic. The problem was we were also there with Carmen Harlan, who did like sports, but just didn't understand them very well. And so it would be a lot of, hey, let's keep our fingers crossed they can come back, you know, stuff like that, just generic comments. But Mort, I used to think to myself, because he gives me these non sequiturs in the beginning, and at the end, I would think, if you just listen to me for 3.5 minutes, instead of going back and looking at your notes, you'd know enough to make a real intelligent intro. But he never really did,
right.
So it was always generic nonsense. There are a lot of great, great anchors that loved it. Rich Fisher was great, the late Rich Fisher, great friend of mine.
What a good guy.
But yeah. Anyway, no, Mort, who was a great newsman, didn't like sports and wasn't going to take the time to learn enough to give me a good intro, and it always bothered me.
You know who also was a great guy?
Never said it to him.
And we don't talk about him at all anymore. Dave Dials.
Oh, great
just
guy.
One of the greatest.
But Dave wasn't
one of
the news
greatest.
Anchors. The sportscaster.
Well,
this
I
guy
know
wants
that,
to know.
But I'm
just wanted
about,
to say it.
Talking about guys in general.
Yeah,
he's allowed to drop in irrelevant comments.
All right, now, that'll be a switch. Now, Denny, why the comment
nobody's perfect,
on Frank Beckman? I mean, I don't even remember you saying anything about Beckman.
You
clearly
Beckman,
just said something.
You?
Why did you say that? And give us more details, please.
What'd you say about Beckman?
You remember that?
Well,
remember
I think Beckman has always been kind of a negative guy. Always. I don't think anybody that.
Negative?
Negative.
I disagree.
I've always thought Beckman's.
You ever listen to Michigan football?
Well, that's different.
Okay.
He's a shameless shill.
He's a shill for Michigan.
A shameless
I mean, that's
shill.
What his job is. He's supposed to kiss everybody's ass.
Well,
over
what's he negative
he does.
About?
He does. Well, he has a tendency to be very negative with things that he knows nothing about. That's all.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
All right.
You mean like
now,
Democrats?
Danny, here's another one for you from, again, this is Tom
Bell. And you
Bell
know what? Maybe
Chicago.
we'll do a two-hour special.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I want Ackerman, too. So I think this is kind of interesting slash funny. Danny, just wondering, with any of your Flint connections and the Jackalone crew, did they ever ask you any questions about the death of Jimmy Hoffa, with the big movie coming out, of course, on Netflix shortly? What happened to Hoffa? Did they ever tell you what happened to Hoffa?
Well, this is a very misunderstood and misinformed story. I never knew Jackalone. In fact, when the FBI came to interview me about Jackalone, I said, I never met Mr. Aloney. His whole last name was Jackalone.
I
thought it was Aloney.
He thought his name was Jack.
I thought his first name was Jack Aloney. And the two FBI guys started laughing their ass off.
I said,
why are you laughing? He says, that's not his name.
I've known Denny since 1987, and I've said, tell me, did they bring you down to the boat and stomp your toe and screw it up the way it's – because Sports Illustrated, they were the same picture of you in the same year on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Right.
One of them said, Denny McLain in antic pursuit of 30 wins. The second one was, same picture, Denny McLain and the mob is what it was. And he has never told me whether any of that happened or not. And
I have. We wrote about it in a book.
Well, you still deny it, and yet so this is
what do I have to say? Yes, it happened. It didn't happen.
But the other story about tripping and you're tripping over the carpet and hurting your toe in your house sound ridiculous.
No,
also.
I never said that either. See what I mean? There you
yes,
go
you
again.
You
Al,
said,
Al Ackerman
no,
has reincarnated in this
you
room
said
this morning.
A squirrel made noise in the garage, woke you up. The TV was on the fuzz because they'd already played the Star Spangled Banner, and you hurt your toe, and that's
all
what
right.
It was.
Now you're going to get the story. You asked for it.
No.
I'm laying on. I had pitched that night and got my butt kicked pretty hard. I'm laying on the couch, all right, watching, of all shows, The Untouchables, which was the last show on Channel 7 every night.
Before they went to the test pattern.
Right. Then what happens is something went crazy in my garage. My dog was in there. So apparently something scared the hell out of my dog. I had a sheepdog. So I got up not realizing that my left foot was numb from laying on it, sitting on it, right? So I took about 5 or 6 steps, and that's how I sprained my foot. And that's the reason I didn't pitch anymore in September.
So,
that was the reason.
So Jack Galone's crew didn't stomp on it on a boat dock in Detroit.
Never, okay. ever happened.
Anyway,
I will tell you this. I met his son once after he – No, I'm not going to go there.
Meet him in the slammer with Gotti's kid?
Oh, stop it.
Anyway.
No.
I want to
bring Brandon in here. I know you want to get to Dino Ciccarelli, but I got to bring Brandon in.
You know, you two degenerates could be in jail really.
Right. May I do that, Eli? I see you're pointing at me for whatever reason.
I wanted to make one.
Go ahead. Okay, here we go. So Brandon can comment on this note. Billy Flugrad writes, I'm a fan of the show. I love Bob's use of the FLs. I'm a Detroit boy, but now I've started saying the FF for effing Falcons. Must live in Atlanta now. I'm in Brandon's age range, and let me tell you, I'm listening and loving every minute of the show. Keep it stiff. Now, Brandon, I guess I can imagine
that's
what
a Drew
that
and Mike
actually
said. That's
means.
A Drew and Mike well, thing. That's a Drew and Mike
But thing. This does seem to be a trope of your generation. Would you explain that, keep it stiff, please, as a letter closing?
That's actually Lenny Dykstra.
Oh,
Lenny Dykstra. When he says goodbye to somebody, he says, keep it stiff.
I'm going to see him Saturday.
Tell him to keep it stiff.
Why does he say
and
that?
I'm going to try to get him on the show next week.
I think it's a sexual reference.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. It seems obvious that it is, but what, it doesn't make any sense.
Well, Lenny's just such a character, and he is very sexual.
Brandon, were you confused by Eli's reference right there to test patterns?
That's exactly what I was going to say, because anytime there are times I'll say, it sounds like a broken record. I'm thinking, does somebody 35 and under know what a broken record is? They haven't never seen a record. I don't know what a broken record is. So when I say a test pattern, how are they going to know what a test pattern is? Do you know what a test pattern is on TV?
No, I mean, you know how Eli used it. That's my point. In other words, here, Brandon, look, here's what I'm trying to say to all the young people out there listening. When we were kids growing up, television wasn't 24 hours. All the stations signed off like around midnight or 1 in the morning. Sure. There was no television overnight. They just put up a test pattern on the screen, or as Eli said, sometimes just snow or fuzz.
Well, No.
Did you know that, Brandon?
No, it was a test pattern.
The
colored
bars?
Since you had the TV turned up to listen, and then they went to it, you'd hear the fuzz because there was no audio
except
for your TV being turned up. Anyway, I always wonder when I mention test pattern, broken record, do people under 35 know what the hell I'm talking about?
Well, Brandon, did you know that?
Of course, yeah. I mean, in terms of the actual phrase itself. Yeah.
Which one? Test pattern or broken record?
Broken record. Oh. Test pattern, not so much, but I do know the colored bars that you used to see. Yeah.
Brandon is a well-rounded young man.
They're actually black and white back then, but that's okay. Anyway, let's talk to Dino Ciccarelli.
Okay.
You know, Dino Ciccarelli only played here 4 years. When I looked over his stats, I'm thinking, my God, it seems like he's been here forever. He was a part of the Wings for so long, and yet only 40 or 19 years was here, and yet you're still in town. Dino, thanks for joining us. And of all the places, I mean, you grew up in Sarnia. You played for Minnesota. You played here. You played for Florida. You played for – how come this has been your home and you planted your roots here?
Well, I'm only 30 minutes from Sarnia. You know, I live on the east side, so obviously still have family there. And, you know, it was a good fit. When I got traded from Washington to Detroit here, you know, I figured, you know, one way or another, this was going to be home. You know, I'm still, like I said, 30 minutes from Canada, my hometown, and still staying in the States. So it worked out great.
You know, it's interesting. You might be, and Bob was saying this morning when we were talking, you might be the greatest non-drafted Hall of Fame player in any sport. And when I went back and recalled how that awful injury you had when you were in juniors, you know, and you weren't drafted. A year after scoring 72 goals, what was it like? What was that injury like? And did you really think at that point you might never be able to play in the NHL?
Well, after scoring the 72 goals, actually, that's probably my only one stat that I ever beat Gretzky in junior hockey. You know, I ended up scoring 72 goals, and Wayne scored 70 goals, you know, his first year junior. It was my second year of junior. And then that playoff run, like a few weeks later, is when I broke my femur in practice. And at that in that era, there is when the World Hockey, the World Hockey League was starting, and I was being recruited by Birmingham and Cincinnati, and obviously that went through the window when I broke my femur, and then obviously I went through two draft picks a couple of years later, and obviously nobody's gonna take a guy with a broken leg. So, and then it was Lou Nanny at the time, and really was the only general manager that really showed any interest, and basically gave me a broken leg contract and said, "Look at this guy could score goals before he broke his leg. Let's sign him to a contract and stick him in Oklahoma City and see how he does." And I made the best of the second opportunity.
Did you ever think you'd be in the Hall of Fame?
No, you hear guys now talk about it. As a kid, I don't think a lot of guys look at it like that. I mean, obviously, you just want to play in the NHL, right. And you want to score in the NHL, and you want to win, and then then you want to stay in the NHL, and then you want to try and win a cup. I don't think guys really, even halfway through your career or three quarters of the way through, you're even thinking, along those lines, and then until it's all over, and then they start bringing it up. So, in baseball, you get to celebrate divisional wins or pennant, and
sure.
So at least you get to celebrate certain things,
right?
Through a career with players. So a lot more guys, I think, have a little bit more satisfaction if they're able to celebrate and enjoy it. I've never been able to do that in the NHL because, with us. Unless, you can't celebrate the division, you definitely don't celebrate the conference. You don't even touch the damn thing, So, and you only get to celebrate when you win the cup. So I wasn't able to really celebrate anything for my 19, 20 years until, I got the call from the Hall. So, it kind of puts a damper on it a little bit. But, when you do get the call, you're able to celebrate, my career. There's a lot of guys that played 17, 18 years and didn't get inducted, yeah. And didn't win a cup. So they really don't get a chance to celebrate their career they had.
Dino, you're talking about going into the Hall of Fame, which happened for you in 2010, ironically, with Jimmy Devolano. So you're one of the greatest goal scorers in the history of hockey. You had to wait 8 years. And a lot of people say it was because of one off-ice issue and then the on-ice issue against Toronto defenseman Luke Richardson, where you had to pay a fine. You were sentenced to 1 day in jail. Do you think that's what kept you out of the Hall of Fame?
I don't know. I think the stats... I've been told no, but there's other guys. Dave Andrechuk, I forget how long he had to wait. He scored more goals than I did. It's a process. I don't know exactly how it works, but how many votes you need to get, but and how difficult it is. I remember every year they would call me prior to and they say, "Hey, it looks like you're going to get in this year, but then you saw the class you were up against, and there was bigger names than me up, it seemed like, every year going into it. So, I don't know. It took a while. Me personally, I lost my dad in 2006, and then I heard that year I missed it by one vote or something, which I would have loved to have my dad around for, sure. For the thing, but it didn't happen. But, when it did happen, I was pretty excited and feel pretty fortunate to, especially after the injury I had, to get a second chance and able to stick around for 19 years.
Never discussed this with you fully because you left after the 96 season and they won the Stanley Cup the next year. But when Scotty Bowman came in, and this is going to be a long question, the guys are going to look at me, like shut the hell up. But when Scotty Bowman came in, there was a lot of...
This is a speech.
Scotty Bowman comes in and you lose to San Jose in the first round in game 7. Nobody is happy. Steve Yzerman is miserable. He only scores 24 goals. Scotty comes in, as you've said in the past, great coach, but terrible person to play for. Iserman couldn't stand him. He got rid of you. Three Hall of Famers, you, Paul Coffey, and he tried to get rid of Steve. Oh, this is the 96 period, all in that year, but Ilitch nixed it. So could they have won with you three guys? And what was, why did Scotty resent the fact that he had three Hall of Fame players and for some reason didn't want any of you?
Well, Scotty didn't, you know, to his credit, you see, I mean, you see, you know, how he coached. And if I ever coached, I'd probably be the same way. You know, you're with the players more than you are your families. And how do you get the best out of your guys, you know, day in and day out? And the way Scotty did it, he didn't really care what name or what number was on your jersey. You're going to play harder. You weren't going to play. And, you know, that's what turned it around for Stevie. I think, you know, Scotty said, hey, you're going to play my way. You're not going to play. I mean, in my case, and, you know, I respect the guy. There's so many things I've learned about Scotty. Again, you go back to the Hall of Fame. I was told after I got inducted, there was somebody that stood up and said, hey, this guy scored 600 in eight of the toughest schools you can score in this league. This guy needs to be in the Hall of Fame. And that guy was Scotty Bowman, defended me. Everybody thinks we had this relationship, and the relationship was very simple. You know, Scotty would always rest his veterans towards the end of the year so they would be, you know, fresh and, you know, ready to play in the playoffs. And I was too stubborn. I didn't like getting sat down. And, you know, I said in my speech in the Hall of Fame, if I would have kept my mouth shut, I probably would have won a couple cups here in Detroit, you know. So, you know, for me, is I didn't want to be sat down. And when we lost to Colorado in the semifinals, you know, the whole Draper injury in Colorado, that's where the rivalry started. At that time, you know, they had they traded for Brendan Shanahan in the summer, another right winger. They had Marty Lapointe coming up through, you know, just being a draft pick. They had Darren McCarty, another right winger. So there wasn't a whole lot of room. You know, we had six or seven right wingers, so it was pretty easy for them just to, you know, move me. And but you know, obviously that sucked. You know, my family was still here, and you know, I was in Tampa, had a good year, but I came back, and I, you know, obviously still have a lot of friends and teammates on the end, and so I was able to watch those guys win the cup, which was great for the city, but you know. You know, it hurt. It would have been nice to been on the team.
Did you know that they were trying to trade you, and or did you see the writing on the wall?
No. Actually, Scotty called me, I think it was late August, actually. So camp was right around the corner.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, he was classy about it. And he said that I was one of his best guys that he's ever coached, and, you know, for a net presence guy, and it was very respectful, and said that, you know, look, we got Shanahan, we got Marty Lapointe coming up, we thought it was best, and, you know, he said, moved you to Tampa, and Phil's going to take care of you, Phil Esposito, and he wished me the best.
Kind of knocks my next question out, because I was going to ask you, did you ever have a man-to-man with Scotty, and whereby you would say, why the hell get rid of me? I'm one of your better players.
No, he knows. I've said it in front of him, like I said in the speech, you know, he knows that he was just trying to keep me fresh for the playoffs. But, you know, one of the situations where we played at home against, I don't want to say it was Chicago, we won 4-1 and I got two goals. We flew out right after the game to Ottawa. We played there the next night. So, and then we were flying home right after the game in Ottawa. So we get up for the pregame meal the next day in Ottawa, and assistant coach comes over to me and he says, Dino, you're not, Scotty doesn't want you to play tonight. You know, he wants to rest you. So I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. I just got two goals last night. Yeah. We're playing tonight. I want to play. And if you're going to rest me, why the hell would you bring me all the way to Ottawa? Why don't you just let me stay home? You know? Yeah. So it was things like that, that kind of, you know, that probably happened four or five times, and anybody would probably get tired of hearing that too. So, but I, again, to this day, I talk to Scotty. I see him everywhere. You know, I see him at the Hall of Fame weekend, you know, every year in Toronto. He comes back to Detroit for different events. I just saw him at the Ken Daniels charity event. So, again, I respect the guy, and if I ever coached, I'd be probably coaching the same way he did.
You know, I wrote this here. You're the toughest little bastard in the sport known for his toughness. You'd park in that crease, and I would love the slow-mo shots of Patrick Waugh sticking his stick between your legs and yanking it, and the punishment that you took to play the way you played. I guess it never discouraged you from just parking in front of the net and take whatever abuse you got.
Well, I dished it out too a little bit, Eli. I gave it out too myself. So but you know what? It's like anything. You know, you try to teach kids or tell kids nowadays, just be determined. You know what I mean? And I mean, the goalie's trying to stop the puck. Defenseman's trying to move you out. Okay, I'm trying to get in there, and it's just it's like a tug of war thing, and it's just determination and being hungry to score goals. I mean, I grew up that way, and the key thing is being intimidated. You know what I mean? Whether the guy's 6'5", I'm 5'10", let's fight for position here. You know, the puck's got to get to the net, so it's either going to hit me, the goalie's not going to see it, or I'm going to get a rebound, so that's kind of my philosophy every game.
Yeah, and I want to ask you this question, too, because I always wondered, I grew up in Chicago, big Blackhawk fan, of course. In fact, I've been with Bobby Hull, and what a trip he is to spend some time with him. And I always wondered, and I asked him, and he wouldn't answer the question, what about when they put that stick between your legs? You got a big enough and strong enough cup?
God, well, I better.
I don't think I've ever been asked that question before. There probably could be a little more protection, to be honest with you.
Bob, go ahead.
Hey, Dino, you've done really well in your post-hockey career. You own a big sports bar out in Macomb County in Shelby Township. So as such, I know you follow the Wings closely. This club, as we record this interview, has now lost 6 straight games, and they're going south fast. What's wrong with them?
Well, again, going back to Yzerman's press conference, the people in Michigan are going to have to be patient, and they're probably testing their patience as we speak. So, again, Stevie inherited, the players and the draft picks. So, he's got his first draft under his belt. Again, these kids get drafted at 17 years old. Mm-hmm. So, and Danny, you would know, it's just going to take time, but it's just, I still watch the guys quite a bit. I watched the game against Ottawa the other night. Whether it's a bad goal or bad defensive plays they were up, they lost to Ottawa, and then the game before that, they were against Vancouver. They were up 2-0. So, there's still some things to work on. They could have won that game, but whether it's a bad goal or bad defensive play or people giving the puck away, those are coaching things that still can be eliminated.
Well, that's really interesting, because I said before we got to you on this program that I didn't think that Jeff Blash would last the season. How about you?
Well, Blash is a really good guy.
Yes.
What I mean, sometimes. Like, if you guys remember Brian Murray. Brian Murray
sure.
was a great coach. He actually traded for me three different teams, and his philosophy was, he would respect the player to go and play hard every night, right? And maybe 80% of the guys you don't have to push, but there's 20 guys, 20% or 10% that you're going to have to push, I don't know if Blash has that in him or not. Compare that to a guy like Scotty. He wouldn't tolerate anything. Like we said, he didn't care if it was me, Yzerman, Coffey, anybody. If you're not playing that night, you're not playing. You're sitting on the end of the bench.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I said that before, and what I also said was that they need a guy like Mike Keenan to come in there and kick some ass.
Well, I mean... On the surface, that sounds good, but it sounds like some of these kids nowadays and what they're making. I mean, coaching's different the way it used to be in the past, and I don't know, I don't know what that perfect fix is. And, Stevie being in Tampa lately, I think he's got his arms around, even with the best coach right now, but with the personnel he has, is that going to make a difference? So I'm sure he's weighing everything out. I'm sure he's got a master plan, but unfortunately, when you inherit you know, some of the kids and the players, you know, it's going to take him time to build the team that he wants.
Based upon what you just said, is would it be true to say that 80% of the effort or 100% of the effort is produced by 80% of the greater players?
Does that make sense?
I don't know. I don't know if I can follow that.
Okay.
we can't either.
Well, then let me ask you.
Thanks
look,
for not trying, because it doesn't make sense.
I got two dunces here, so don't worry about it. Listen, I'll ask you one question. I know you got to run. Let me ask you this.
Hang on a minute. That sounds like something Scotty would come up with.
That's right.
Sean Burr would always say that. Sean was such a great guy. Sean was here with Scotty, part of a meeting, and he'd go, "What the hell did he just say?"
I know. I would go back to the studio after interviewing Scotty. I would say, you ask question A, he'll just answer whatever is on his mind. Have nothing to do with the question. See, at question B, he could give you answer F. You're exactly right.
Well, let me ask you this: would you ever want to coach? Would you ever want to get back in the game in a serious way?
No, you know, we had the junior team in Sarnia, junior A, with the Sarnia Sting, me and my two brothers, and, you know, they wanted me to get into the coaching too. For me, I played 20 years and, you know, with the traveling and everything the winning and losing, and even with a coach, it's just, you know, it's even more time consuming than you were as a player. So I kind of like the free time. I'm running a restaurant bar. I can golf. I can go on trips, do whatever I want, and not have to worry about winning and losing every day.
Well, you sound happy as hell.
Hell yeah. I mean, things are good. I mean, why wouldn't we? You know, I've been pretty fortunate. Like I said, I was able to play 20 years after getting a second chance after breaking my femur.
Sure. You know, it's interesting. You mentioned 20 years. Guys I talk to when they're retired, like Chris Spielman, for example, I go, when you look back, what are you proudest of? Was it this record or leading the line? He goes, you know what I'm proudest of? I look back and say, man, I played at the top level for 12 years. I can't even believe when I look back at the price I paid, how hard I have to work, the travel, all that. Do you look back, and besides the fact you scored 608 goals and you had an incredible career, do you ever think, man, I did that for 19 years. How the hell did I hang in there for that long? And are you just proud of the fact that you lasted that long?
No, I'm proud of the fact, you know, that, like I said, I got the second chance. I mean, I had doctors tell me that leg was severely broken, my femur, it was above my knee, you know, so and it took me 2 good years to even get close to coming back. But I had a trainer in London, Ontario, that I give him a lot of credit, and my dad. Yeah, obviously they pushed me, you know, because it was awful depressing going through that. You know, I go from outscoring Gretzky to, you know, nobody wanting you.
Yeah, sure.
You know, to just every day of going through therapy and say, look at Dino, you're going to get another chance here. And I was, you know, and sure enough, it happened. Trust me, I was determined that I was going to get a second chance and I was going to make it. So.
And Dino, and one other thing, people have a tough time understanding what you just said too, because when you think people don't want you, and I mean, when I was retiring, not because I wanted to, because they asked me to retire, it's a terrible, terrible, horrible feeling to think that nobody wants you.
Well, and then you play with a chip on your shoulder.
Yep.
You hear a lot of athletes do that, and you know, I mean, it's a game. It's whether it's baseball or basketball or something. You know what I mean? You got to be determined, and you got to have the will to just to play hard. If you got ability, the writing's on the wall. You can do whatever you want.
Yep, that's for sure.
Regarded as one of the best players that ever won the Stanley Cup, maybe the best undrafted player in the Hall of Fame. And what his teammates said about you is really remarkable, too. Chris Osgood said he wouldn't back down from anybody, and Chris Draper called you absolutely fearless. Thanks for joining us, Dino. Best of luck. We'll come out and see you at Cicerelli's 22 there in Macomb County.
Dino, thanks a million.
Anytime.
Look forward to seeing you. Thank you.
All right. Yeah.
Thanks, Dino.
That was a lot of fun talking to Dino, really was. And by the way, let's remind people that if you have questions and you can follow up our interview with him, call us at 760-89-BALLS, at 760-89-BALLS for a text message or a voicemail, or you can email us at asknofilter@gmail.com. All right.
He sure sounded happy, didn't he?
Yeah, he's 60 years old. He's in the Hall of Fame. He's, healthy, it seems, and so good for Dino.
We got to run out there and have a free lunch.
Good luck with that.
The only guy who's getting a free lunch out there is Eli Zarrett. That's because he won't go into his wallow with those alligator arms. He's getting a free lunch.
All right. So long, everybody. We'll see you again on the next No Filter on Monday.